What's up, my debt-free millionaire zealots? Hey, this is Zach Edwards coming to you for another day of debt-free millionaire financial, like personal finance course. So this is actually a book that we've written, but you can listen to the whole podcast, get close to most of the stuff that's in the book. But at the same time, you really want to get the book because you want to write down your own personal information in there. And this is basically writing down your dreams, your goals, the amount of money that you have, the amount of money that you want to make, all these different things. And so you really want to get this book because it walks you through personal finance for 5 days a week. 5 days a week. And every week there is a new set of information. So this week we're talking about income. So this is actually week one, day two. This is our third episode of this broadcast. But in this, the most important thing about this course or this day in our course is to figure out what you want in the future. So we work with the idea of you find your goal, you want what you want, and then you work backwards from there. So today we're going to actually ask you, do you want a high income or a low income? And this is actually really, really important to know because you might say you want a high income, but you don't want to work that much. Sorry, doesn't usually work that way, especially starting off. But if you want a low income and low work, that somewhat works. If you want a high income and want to be able to work a good amount to get that high income, hey, we're going to help you get there as well. So, and then stay tuned for the end because the end is where I talk about business and how I've made this goal, like my goal for this podcast is to have a $1 million brand by the end of this year. So 1 year later, we will actually have $1 million in the brand. This will be everything from merchandise and annual income to investments that we have. We're going to do it all for you so you can actually experience it with us. So if we go renovate a house, we're going to bring you into that house so you can actually see what we're doing. If we're going to do anything in the stock markets, in crypto, we're going to show you some of those things. We're not going to give you all of the personal information because that's what it takes to get into the crypto and stocks. But we're going to walk you through what we do in order to become successful in those. And I have not had a stock or a crypto investment or anything that has lost money. So just saying, I've had plenty of houses that have made money every time. Again, never lost money on an investment this way. So I'm going to walk you through. And truthfully, the stuff I'm going to share with you, you can find on the internet. You're going to find them all over the place. But we're going to give it to you straight, direct, and at a small amount each day so that you can actually glean or retain the information that we're giving you. And so you could actually do it in your own life. We're actually going to give you reasonable steps in order to make your goal. Instead of just saying, hey, these are the platitudes, these are just ideas, go do it yourself. And that's what a lot of people do, and we will not do that. So the best thing to understand in this one podcast is where do you want to be in, say, 10, 20 years? You map it out. You tell us where in the book, you tell us exactly where you want to be at one point, and we're going to work backwards and how to get you there. So first off, we're going to talk about income. Okay, this is where I was talking about you can work a low amount and make a low amount of money, or you can work a lot and make a lot of money, or you can work in between and still make a lot of money. It all depends on you. So we're going to work you again backwards. But let's go through the basics. Okay, so the first thing is that to know, this is the statistic, 69.8% of Americans work for someone else. They have a full-time job working for someone else. So why that's important is that this is like 70% of the country. 30% might be doing other things, but most likely that other 30% has already gone through the hard knocks of making their money, and now they're doing things like investments and other things. We want to get you to that point. So you can be the 30% that's not working full-time for someone else. But as of right now, as you're starting off or as you're in your own part of life, right now you're in with everyone else. Again, 70%, 69.8% work for someone else. It's okay. It's totally okay. The normal hours, business hours, are anywhere from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. or 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. It's an 8-hour work week. Now, there are some people in Congress that want to make it a 32-hour work week. The problem with that is, They don't want you to make a lot of money. They actually want to keep you poor because it becomes you become reliant on the government. We don't want you to be there. We want you to be self-reliant. We don't want you to have to worry about if the government's going to send you a check this week or this month. Because they might not. If all of a sudden Congress gets shut down, you won't get your check. Okay, so why is it so important to become self-reliant? Just like I just said, because we want you to rely on yourself and be able to, actually, if you become successful, you can make 100 other people successful because you're successful. You're going to be using more lawn care services. So someone that's doing lawn care could be more successful. You're going to be buying more goods. That means people that are producing the goods are going to be more successful. These are all things that we want you to do. And so in a full-time job, when you're first starting out, it's a great thing. Because what you're going to do, and this is very important. This is very important for you to be successful in the future and not be the 70%, but instead to be the 30%, is I want you to go to work, and you should want to go to work and do this, and glean, basically learn everything possible of how the person that started your company became successful and how they got to that point. Because you want to know that they're successful, for one thing, but you want to know how they got to that point. And you're going to learn it by working with this person. And the more interest you have in that person or how they became successful, the more that person will want to promote you. You know why? Because he wants success in his company. And if he knows that somebody is seeking success and wants to learn how that other person got success, he's hoping that you'll bring more success to his company or her company. So they're going to want to promote you and use you, utilize you. One thing that they don't want to see is they don't want to see you bored. They don't want to see you having issues at work. If you do that, all of a sudden you're going to be out. You're going to be one of the first people out. If you are one that's trying to be successful, doing everything you can, you're showing up, you're doing things, you're finding interest in the owner or your manager, they're going to see this and they're going to want to keep you around so you don't lose your job. Okay, so that is something to know that's very important about a full-time job. Now, a full-time job brings you a paycheck. And this is very important, especially starting off, because in a down economy, people that work on their own might not get paid. But if you're still working for someone, you're going to get paid. Legally, they have to pay you. They will have everybody on top of them if they do not pay you for that 40 hours a week, if you're an employee. If you're a contractor, it's a little bit less stable. So starting off as a full-time worker, it's a great thing, but you're not planning to be a full-time worker for the rest of your life. But this will bring you a paycheck as you're getting to the point that you need to be in order to be successful on your own and to become self-reliant. So that's why this is important. We want to get you to that point and then you can succeed. So full-time job, perfect. Now, not all full-time jobs will give you a ton of money. Most full-time jobs will start you off at minimum wage or even a little bit above. If you have a school, if you have a degree, you'll have a higher paycheck most likely, I should say, than the person that's starting off and just going straight in from high school. So just know you're going to be making less if you go straight from high school. Now, there's something that I'm going to share with you that I'm going to go a lot more in depth in the future. Now, you might be someone that goes straight to work and you might be thinking, well, I'm going to be earning less. Here's the actual truth. You might not. If you work it smart, you will actually make more money than even a doctor coming out when they come out. You know, a doctor has about 11 years worth of education. That means they go through their associate's degree, bachelor's degree, master's degree, doctoral. Then they have to do residency. It's all up to about 11 years, 11, 12 or so. Now, the more that they work for these other educational purposes, the less they make at that time. Now, while they're making their 11 years just to start getting a full paycheck as a doctor, their $100,000, their $150,000, they're even $200,000. In order to get to that point, they have 11 years to make it. So you have 11 years to catch up to them. And this is actually through hard knocks. You're going to be learning a lot of life lessons, and it's going to be harder for you because you're not going to go through school and you're not going to come out with a degree that gets you a nearly automatic job. you're going to go through a lot more of the grunt work. And you know what? If that's what you want, then go for it. Don't be sad that you're not going to go to school. At the same time, if you're going to do this grunt work, you're going to want to save money and don't spend it all. Don't just invest it in stocks and hope it's going to go up. The best way of doing it is investing in yourself. Take night classes, take skill-based training, even go to a trade school. These are all ways to boost this amount of income that you're going to accumulate before you get to that 11 years when the doctor comes out and is making $150,000. By 11 years, say you're a programmer, you can be making $150,000 right off the bat. Within like 4 or 5 years of getting into the industry. And if you can do that, by the time the doctor, the educated elites come out of a doctorate degree, you're going to have much more money with them than they do. And you won't have the debt that they have. At the same time, I do not want to say to anyone that wants to go out to college or wants a law degree, a medical degree, or even an engineering degree, any of these that need to have education, go for it. This is your choice. I'm just giving you the options and letting you know all the odds and ends. And this is the bare bottom truth. Anybody that says it and argues is probably just trying to give you a bias, but I'm telling you, both sides are good. It depends on what you want to do. But do you want to work through the hard knocks, or do you want to go through education and bypass a lot of that hard knocks? In the end, you can be at the exact same place with a person that comes out of college with a huge degree, tons of debt, but a huge paycheck, or someone that starts off really small and does it smart and goes through. Either way works, because you're going to be able to make it successful depending on yourself. Okay. Now, sorry, got off on a little rant, a little high horse. Let's get back to business. Okay. So in this book, we then go through part-time work. Now, 43% of Americans that are working age have a side gig. Now, you might think, okay, Uber Eats, Grubhub, some of these other small independent gigs. Oh no, I'm talking about like Etsy. I'm talking about Upwork. I'm talking about Fiverr. I'm talking about anything that gives you a side business. I can also say that you have a small business running out of your household part-time, or you do cleaning on the side. You have a part-time job, meaning you don't work 40 hours a week, but you work for someone for only part of the time. Those are all side gigs or part-time work. Those are great. If you need to do two part-time works because you can't get a full-time work, that also works. Just watch for how much you're making, because the ultimate goal is for you to get a full-time job if you're doing two part-time jobs. And then you have less stress by doing that, because you're not running from one job to the next job. But also remember that as a part-time worker, you don't also have the benefits of a full-time worker. And because you haven't made your money yet, you don't have the ability to buy health insurance or dental or vision or life insurance or all these other insurances or other benefits that you would get by working for someone else. So be careful if you're going to go for part-time jobs or even side gigs. Now, here's an interesting bit, little bit of a rant, but not totally. So if you go to places like San Francisco or Seattle and you try to do a side gig, a lot of those side gigs are becoming union work and are being made to have you become an employee. Well, one of the big problems with this is a lot of those side gigs are saying, you know what? We don't need Seattle. We're gone. We're out of there. We don't need you. And so all of a sudden, there's less work in your area. So be careful on where you live as well, because the more regulations they have around those things, the harder it is for you to make it there. And then also the more they can tax you as well. You want to get to a place where there's like low or no income tax, and being able to work there as a side gig, oh, you're going to make tons of money. So when it comes to finding a place to live and thinking about your finances, well, when you're thinking about your finances, always think about where you're going to live. You want a place that has low expenses. Your minimum, for some reason, I forgot the word right now, but the minimum that you need to survive, you want to be able to make it so that you have a good place that's very pro side gigs and investments and pro you and not pro government, because they're going to tax you. They're going to do all these different regulations to bring you down. Again, a lot of those people in DC, they do not want you making a ton of money. They want you to own little and be happy. But the problem is, it's like, you know what? You're in America. You're going to be always comparing yourself to the next person. We want you to be able to be happy while making a good amount. And that's what you're going to be able to do. And you get to decide what that good amount is. We're just going to be able to get you there. One other side note. Okay, so this is in the news. Actually, it came out, I think, Friday. But no one was really talking about it. And this is very important. So Zillow, it's a real estate website. You should get to know this one. You're going to get to know this one on our platform or on our in our program. But Zillow is a real estate program, and they came out with information that as of 4 years ago, so they've done this report between, let's see, it's 2024 and 2020. If you lived in 2020 and you wanted to be comfortable in the amount of money that you made, you only had to make about $59,000 a year. That's not that bad. Even as a minimum wage worker, you're getting fairly close to that. Here's the bad part. As of 2020, and actually I was saying it was 2019 and 2023, because the information's not out for 2024 yet. So 2019 to 2023, now you need about $109,000 a year to live just comfortably. Again, this is why I said you should be a debt-free millionaire. Because when, if you're paying your mortgage, because mortgages have all gone up, if you're paying all these expenses, the debt especially, you're paying more per month and it's taking you more money to become comfortably living than it would if you didn't have that debt. So yes, people out there love to say, oh no, you want to leverage all your money and put it into new investments so you make more money. Great. During an economy like this, you're going to be paying buttloads. I mean, there is going to be so much money that you're going to be paying because you're paying your debt, and your debt is just going up, especially if it's on a credit card, or you're going to be paying for your mortgage or your rent. There's a lot of these things that you're actually going to go up, not just one or two. There's a ton of things that are going to go up. But if you're debt free, your mortgage can't go up because you own your house. Your debt can't go up because you have no debt. So automatically, it's for you to decide. We're not going to tell you exactly which one to do. Well, I'll tell my preference. I can. I have a bias because I've been debt-free before. And again, for my business, I got it back into debt. And I have a little bit more stress because I have debt on my shoulders. But it was so peaceful, so relaxing when I didn't have the debt on my shoulders, when I didn't have a mortgage. So keep track of that. Don't get into debt unless you're okay with a good amount of stress and your interest rates going up, because they will, they do. It's history. There's no question there. So let you decide. Again, I'm going off on all these rants. Let's get back to this. But just so you know, all my rants are about what we're learning. And that's why we have this. This is why I'm allowing myself to do some rants, because they're about the topics that we're talking about. We're just talking about side gigs. As regulations increase, as more controls happen, the less you're going to have of these part-time gigs, or you're going to have to make your own, which is fine too. Like my daughter is 12 years old. And so my daughter decides that she wants to make a bracelet company. Great. Are we going to report that? Not if she doesn't make over $600. Sorry, at $600, that's when I report it. If she makes under that, and I'm sorry, if you shut down a kid for having a lemonade stand because your city has something against it, you have a lot more to account for, because you should not be shutting down the innovations of young people. Wow. Okay, I'm done with the rants. Okay, let's go on. Small business owners, that's the next stage. So a lot of this 30% are actually the small business owners. Now, here's some statistics for you to know. 44% of what the country makes is made by small businesses. Yeah, that's right. So the big companies make up the other 56%. Okay, Here's another statistic to know. 99% of businesses are small businesses. So only 1% of businesses in the United States are actually large businesses. The rest of them are small businesses. And there are a lot of regulations, just so you know, that are coming out to hurt that as well. So as a small business owner, you're going to have to be smart. We're going to walk you through all those steps. Another statistic to know is 20% of small businesses fail within the first year. A lot of time it's because of planning. A lot of it's because of planning. The second one is because of money, and money has to do with planning. So when we help you through this. Now, I said that there's two books that we have coming out. We have a third book that's in production, and that's actually small businesses. That's actually creating a business. So stay tuned for that, because our podcast will actually go through all the things in the personal finance course. Then it will go all through all the things with the flipping, and then it will go through all the things business. Now, if we get the business book out first, we might actually slide that in and do the flipping third, and the small business, owning a business as second. But hold off on that. That's something to know for the future. There's one more statistic when it comes to small businesses, and this one's very important. I said 20% fail within the first year, right? 50% of them fail within 5 years. Historical Conquest, the company that that has been my bread and butter for the last 10 years, is still running. It's been 10 years. So we're pretty solid. We'll be sticking around for a long time. Zogos, X-O-G-O-S, this company has actually been around for 2 years. So we made it past the first 20%. That's a little bit, I have to be completely transparent with you. The first 2 years, or first year and a half, we've been building it. So we don't actually have revenues. And this came off a $50,000 grant. So it wasn't much. But this has been basically happening on the side while still working with Historical Conquest. So full transparency, that's how it is. But small businesses are very important in this, in the United States, because again, it's 44% of what we make, and it's 99% of businesses. So if 99% of businesses, and there's a lot of businesses out there, can actually be successful, 99% of businesses that are successful can live and can be successful, your company can be successful. We'll get you past that 1 year hump. Not an issue. That 5 year hump is going to be mostly in your hands. But if you can get it past those, that's 70% of all companies. That means 30%. There's another 30% we used. Oh yeah. That's 30% of people are not working full time for someone else. So 2 30%, those are the two goals you want to get to. Okay. So let's keep going. There's a lot more that we're not going to cover in this. So read the book. It'll get you a lot of information. For those that are watching this early on, sorry, the book's not out yet. It's actually being finished to be published. And that's the personal finance book. The flipping one will come soon, shortly afterwards. So stay tuned. We're looking at it at less than a month. But come back and listen to these with that book. Actually, it's probably the best thing for you to actually hear it one time. Wait for that book to come out. Get the book. And then come back through and listen to it again. Because you're going to learn through it. Learn about it every time you listen. You're going to learn about something new in that same time. So when you're doing a full-time job, who's in charge? Somebody else. If you're doing a side gig, who's in charge? It's actually like a 50-50, because you can quit that job anytime if it's not your full-time or your full revenue stream for your income. But when you're a small business owner, you're 100% in charge, minus with the government or your customers or your suppliers. We're going to go through all those things. But when it comes to your schedule and everything else, it's all on you, which takes a lot more stress. It does put a lot more weight on you, but it's a lot more rewards as well. And that's where we're going to get you to that point. Time commitment, if you're a small business owner. Let's go back to full time. If you work full time, again, it's a 8 to 4 or 9 to 5. And then technically, you are supposed to be off. You don't have to work outside of business hours. That's when you should charge your company if they're charging you. Now, for instance, my dad was military. This is one of the things that we hated as the kids, seeing him do this. But he would do his 9 to 5, or actually he would do his 8 to 5. Then he'd come home because he was an officer in the Coast Guard. And so he'd come home. He'd do things with us as the kids, as a family. And then at, I think it was like 9 o'clock, we would go to bed. And what would he do? He'd pull out all his work and he'd work until midnight. He usually had like a bowl of ice cream or some M&Ms and he'd slowly go through. I don't know how he'd, man, if I had a bowl of ice cream next to me or a bowl of M&Ms, oh, they'd be gone within the first 5 minutes. So that's why I don't do that. My dad could do it, but he'd be up till like midnight finishing up his work. So he worked like 12 hours, eight that he was paid for. But as you know, with the military, they don't actually get much of a break. Which I actually agree they should actually make more money than they do. Because they work 24/7. They're always on call. So just to know, there are some differences. And this, we can actually go after, over the military and other first responders. It's not actually part of our system. So maybe we'll actually create a book on it to help out with that. As a military brat, a child that moved around everywhere, there's a lot of things that I learned. And also one of my business partners, former, but still willing to help, is full-time military. I have my data analyst, business partner. He is actually also retired military. And we have some CPAs that will be helping us with that. So we can do that if you'd like. So email us, message us, get us some information if that's what you'd like to do. We'll create a book on that so you can learn those parts as well. Because there's a lot of things in the military that need to be learned, a lot of their systems. I'm not going to go off on that rant. Let's keep going forward because we're going to run out of this 30-minute time period. Because that's how long the classes usually are. Okay, next one, investments. Again, part of the 30% that do not work full-time are living off their investments. Now, the rest, the 70%, are now collecting their investments. Here's some statistics. Okay, 52% of Americans have a 401k or 403b. These are two retirement plans that your company that you work for puts into, contributes to. Sometimes they just contribute what you contribute. Sometimes they contribute like matching, or they'll give you, if you, for every dollar you put in, they'll put in 10 cents. That type of thing. They'll match it at some somehow in there. Now, you might actually max out at some point, make enough money that you're going to max out your 401k. And you're like, okay, so what do I do now? And this is when you get a IRA. You can get an IRA. There are two different types of IRA. We'll go through them different in different things at a different time. Okay, my throat is starting to wear out. I'm going to have to get some water. I'm going to see how long I can go before I have to do that. Another statistic, 14% of Americans buy stocks. These are individual stocks on different companies. These are very risky. You might buy something that's well-established, a media company or a soda company or something like that. Those are fine. Those are less risky. But if you put into new stocks, there's a good chance it's going to fail. Again, 20% and then 5% within the first 5 years. So just be careful there. Now, 65.1% own a house. That is an investment. Some people may say that it's not. We're going to make sure that you buy, when you buy a house, it is an investment. Or at least, if it's not going to be an investment because you don't want to go the way that we want you to or are telling you about, you'll at least know that. So 65.1% own a house. This could be an investment or it could be a money pit. We'll let you know at a further time. But another one, 15% own precious metals, gold, platinum, silver, all these different metals that you can buy, all worth money. Just depends on how much. Gold is a high one. Platinum is a very high one. You're going to buy ounces of them. So small coins of each of these. If you want to just get in, just to have something on hand, say if the world blows up, silver. It's a great one. There's like it's like $20 for a coin. And you can buy one here, one there, and always have a little bit of it locked away. We have a safety deposit box in a bank. You can put it there. These are all ways for you to be able to make sure that you're stable and also making money, because those precious metals, most likely, nearly 100% chance, they will go up. I'm not just saying how, though. They might go up 1, 2, 3. They might go 1,000%. I can't say. One thing to know is that buying silver can actually be used in a lot of different electronics as well. So there's also not just keeping it as a precious metal, but people are using it for your electronics. So it's also really nice to have as well, because the price is going to go up because it's always going to be needed. Another one to know is 25% of Americans have no retirement at all. Okay, that is, say there's four people that you are friends with. One of those most likely does not have retirement at all. You are not going to be that one person. You're going to be the other three. You're going to have investments, because we're going to walk you through how to do investments. Again, I'm not a financial advisor. I am not a CPA. But these are just things that you need to know, and we will walk you through that. Okay, so with investments, time commitment is large or small. You just basically decide. If you want to do large, it's going to be, you're going to be moving stocks around and different things over the stock market. If you want a small amount, it's probably going to put it into an account or have somebody else watch it, and you're going to have small amounts of time on it. It's totally up to you. Both are good to some extent, to some point, but we're going to help educate you so you're ready for that time, so that when you decide to have someone else run it or have it yourself run it, you know exactly what's going on. So one, you can make sure that that person that's supposed to be representing you is actually representing you instead of themselves. I got a person you should look up. His name is Bernie Madoff. Don't ever invest with a guy that just seems too good to be true. It usually is. So we're going to help you through that as well. But okay, so I've come to the end of the podcast. I've run out of my time. I'm actually not quite sure how long I've been talking. Okay, it's been about 31 minutes. So in the last 2 minutes, let me explain how we're actually going to get to that $1 million that I was talking about. One stage today. I'm going to be sharing different parts of what we're doing. So first off, when you're doing these big goals to make $1 million, you want to start up a business, you want to plan. One way to plan is, one piece of knowledge you need to know is that you are not the smartest person in the room. That's why financial advisors are nice, lawyers are nice. Now, if you're starting up a business, here's another great thing for you. You want to create a board. Now, a board is basically a group of people that are professionals to help you guide you through certain events. You could say like mentors, but except in a board member is someone that helps control your company. When a decision has to be made, your board's gonna be brought in, they're gonna be talked to. You want their advice. Now, they do not have to be a board of directors, which basically has full control of your company. They can be a board of advisors. It means everyone has a part in it. A lot of times you're gonna have to pay for these people. If it's a nonprofit, most of the time you don't have to pay for these people unless there's certain circumstances. But when you're starting off a nonprofit, don't pay them. If someone doesn't see your mission and want to be there because of your mission, don't have them on your board, because they're not there for that, for you. They're not there for the cause. They are there for themselves. Everyone that joins you on as a nonprofit should be joining on because they agree with your mission. At the same time, if you're starting a business, you have to find some way of compensating them. This might not be right away. This also might be part of your company. You have to decide that, and we can go through it more in the future. But one of the great things about having a board is that you get a diverse amount of opinions. Now, I do have to say opinions, but remember, these are professionals. So you want to bring in someone that has legal background, accounting background. Anything that you're going to be doing, you want someone have professionals, one or two or three, that actually have it in that field. But you do want a diversity in this. And this reason why I say diversity, you do actually want people of opposing views. You want someone to say, that's a stupid idea and you better not do that. And you should actually take that advice. The reason why you should take that advice is because there's a reason why they're bringing it up. Another type of diversity is you don't want five people or six people that look and sound and think like you. That is the worst thing. That is not a board. That's an echo chamber. I say something and I just hear it back. That's the worst thing to do. Never have a board that is exactly like yourself. For instance, okay, you want to have male and female on your board. You want them from all different demographics. You want to know that they have all different experiences. Like I said, professionals, you want them all different industries. But you want industries that have to do with you. You want people that have to do with this cause. You want them to know exactly what you're doing because you want to know that they are going to have advice that actually makes sense and is actually part of it. And not, here's the big thing as well. You're going to have people that try to come onto your board that are very biased one way or another. And they're going to try to talk other people into this. You don't want them. Someone that has a bias, that they have a set mindset, no. You want them to be able to be open to what they could learn or open to what could be presented and say, wait a minute, that's actually a really good idea. Or, oh, I was actually wrong about that. And as a CEO or as a business owner, you need to be that person that says, oh, that is a great idea. So I have a mentor who thinks that I don't listen to her, but I have changed so many things because I do listen to her. And the reason why she says that is because we'll have a dispute of some sort, a battle of the minds. But that's not a bad thing as well. You want to be able to bat back at your board. You want to be a high thinker, an understander, someone that knows your industry very well. And then if someone comes in, an advisor or someone else that gives you a stupid idea, you want to be able to say, that's a bad idea. We're not doing that. Because you do have to stand up to your board at some point, or a member of your board. The hope is that if it's a right decision, the rest of the board will back you up. If it's a wrong decision and everyone's against you, you might want to second think what you're thinking. So these are all things to learn. But if you're going to start a business, the best way of doing it is put a board together. Now, when I started off a board, I had my brother, I had his wife. Yeah, don't have spouses on your board. Don't even have your spouse on the board. And I mean, no offense to the spouse, but you're going to butt heads and it's going to come home. Don't do that. Find one spouse that needs to be on the board and be good with it. So if you are joining a business, let one person deal with the board and then bring the ideas back to you. Do not bring your work home with you when it comes to a small business. It will destroy your marriage. It'll destroy your life. Do not do it. Divorce. I'll go into this too because there's a lot of financials that have to do with this. You'll lose half that you own, or your business will be destroyed because of it. We're going to work you through things that you make good decisions. And again, you have to make it on your own. But as a divorcee who owned a business before his divorce and owned a business after his divorce, there's a lot of things you can learn and learn from my mistakes and learn from my successes as well. Use me, use other people. That's great. This is why we have a board. So going back to the board, the next thing to know is that you want to be able to find people that are close to this issue. Bring on a teacher. If you're doing something that's for education, bring on a teacher. Yes, teachers are going to ask for some sort of compensation. If you have to bring on a teacher that works for your own kids, or that is a family member or friend, bring them on. Bring on friends. But make sure that you have people that would be diverse, and also let them know that they're either going to be kept on and be paid later on, or they're going to be released because you're going to bring someone else on. Don't have too big of a board because you want to be able to fill more seats. I think for actually my first company with Historical Conquest, I had to reorganize to get some of these people off when the divorce happened. Again, it's dirty stuff that happens during a divorce. So anyways, what you want to do is make sure that you have people that are willing to do it for free or low price. The first one, I had to give parts away of my company, and I slowly work them back to buying out all those stakes or having them give them up in order to bring the company back right. So Historical Conquest has gone through a lot, and we don't want you to have to go through that. So you might have to pay them. Stay away from ownership in the company, because that gets a lot of hardship as well. Luckily, I didn't lose it with the most important people in my life, which was my brother, his wife, and other people that were most important with me. I have a great relationship with them. That's all I'm going to say. So for this $1 million that I'm talking about, the first thing I'm going to do when starting up a business is I'm going to create this board to help us out here. Help us with the ideas, help us to know what's right and what's wrong. Another board that you might want to do is something to do with your creative side. So create a focus group, a test group. And this can be, this does not have to be just family and friends and people like that. You can find people to test your product. People love testing products. Go down the street, you're going to find some people, depending on what your industry is. Find a board of customers or a board of advocates for your customers. I had teachers on. I had 10 teachers, one curriculum writer. And a lot of times the people fought against the curriculum writer because it was interesting the type of biases that they said have to be in curriculum. The board was completely against it. And this is teachers from, actually all of them were in Texas because we were trying to get into Texas at the time. And they were from all different demographics and such. And they were all against this curriculum writers on certain things. So again, I'm way over my time that I was planning for, but no, this is all very important when talking about starting a business. Going back to originally my personal finance course, it's very important to know where you want to become, and we will work you backwards. Today, we just walked over where you can get income. Now let's find out what your goal is. Again, that was rule number one, or episode two. You want to find out what your goal is, and then we will work you backwards. So now we've gone over income. I think the next time we talk, it's going to be over expenses. Let me see. Next time it's going to be talking about, oh, how much do I need to spend? Look at that. Wants and needs. Stay tuned for that one. That one's going to be a great one. Thanks so much for being part of this, and we will talk to you next time. Thanks, guys. And thank you to all my debt-free millionaire zealots. I'm hoping to make you one too. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.